Ms. Dyer, good morning.
Good morning, and may it please the court. Beverly Dyer on behalf of Joseph Lasley, and I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. Based entirely on the pre-sentence report, the district court enhanced Mr. Lasley's guideline range by 2 points, finding that he used a computer to persuade, induce, entice, or coerce a minor to engage in illegal sexual activity.
Let me stop you. It wasn't just the PSI. Wasn't it also in the plea agreement?
In the plea agreement, I don't know that the guidelines findings were stated. Well, the plea agreement made a prediction as to the guidelines findings.
It didn't have this specific enhancement in it?
It did have this specific enhancement, and it did not identify what the source of the enhancement was, and Mr. Lasley did not personally agree to that enhancement, as this court required in Accardi, that he be informed personally in open court of terms of the plea agreement, and that he personally agree to certain terms in order for this court to consider them waived and not review them for plain error.
What does Accardi say?
Accardi says that in the plea, with respect to certain plea provisions, that is required that the defendant be informed by the judge
in open court. Okay.
With respect to the plea, before this court will consider those provisions waived.
All right. And the fact that he signed it and the fact that his counsel knows it is not enough.
There's no information in there with respect to the plea, and at the plea hearing, he would have been informed, as all defendants are routinely informed, that predictions as to the guideline findings are not final, that the final guideline findings will be made at the time of sentencing, and that his sentence could go higher or lower based on, or that his guideline range could be higher or lower. So at the time that the parties signed the plea agreement, they can make no better predictions than they can at the plea hearing itself. And so for the parties to put in the plea agreement their thoughts as at that moment as to what the guideline range will be is not final, it's not binding, and the plea agreement itself says that, as was the defendant informed at the plea hearing.
All right.
And therefore, I do not believe that he waived, so he certainly did not personally waive. At most, he forfeited his right to make the claim that he makes here. This case involved no attempt by Mr. Lasley to use Detective Palchik, the adult intermediary, to bend a fictitious child victim's will. At most, he asked for information in this case, and therefore the district court plainly erred in finding that he used a computer to entice a child.
Was that actually the basis, though, of the enhancement? Because
yes,
it's a two-pronged enhancement, and one part of it is using the computer for interstate travel.
Yes, and I would very much like to address that. But first, I would like to point out that the district court, we know that the district court itself relied on the persuade, induce prong of the enhancement from the, because that was what was stated in the PSR, and the district court adopted the findings of the PSR and the statement of reasons that are attached to the judgment. That statement of reasons that's not publicly filed, and it's not in our appendix, but that is what the district court explicitly found, is that it was adopting the PSR. With respect to the government's argument that this court could affirm based on the travel prong of that enhancement, first of all, the district court did not make that finding, as was clear from the statement of reasons. Second of all, the facts of this case do not support that enhancement, because as both the plea proffer and the PSR statement of facts, which are what the district court relied on, clearly state that the arrangements to schedule a place and a time of meeting were made by telephone after the initial chats. They were not made using a computer. And therefore, this court should not make any factual findings with respect to whether the defendant used a computer to facilitate travel in the first instance. The district court should make that factual finding. Second, it is unclear, and this is an issue that was not discussed in Sandoval, whether the term participant applies to the defendant himself travel prong.
How about the online conversation that they agreed to meet at a public place prior to engaging in sex with the child in order to validate to each other that they were not police officers and then walk to Detective Palchak's nearby home? So that's an online
facilitate conversation. Even if they spoke online about a meeting in the District of Columbia, they didn't set up that. It's not facilitating travel by arranging a specific place.
I don't know, agree to meet at a public place and they could walk to his house. That's
Judge Henderson, travel is an element of the offense in this case, and it's unclear to me what you would have to do to facilitate travel if all you need is to set up an appointment or say we will meet in a public place. They did not identify a public place. They did not identify a means of travel. They did not set a time in that part of the chat. So all of that was done later. And even to...
Are you saying that what they would have had to have used a computer for would be, I'll meet you at 2 o'clock at such and such street?
Well, it must be something more than just we will meet, because travel is an element of this offense, and otherwise it would apply to every single, the enhancement would apply to every single offense in which there was travel. Because there is no other way to communicate or find any evidence of the offense when you have travel as an element of the offense if anything you do is facilitating travel by a participant. Second of all, I'm not sure that participant means defendant under this guideline. If you look at this guideline, refers for the definition of participant to 3B1.1. And 3B1.1 defines a participant as a person who is criminally responsible for the commission of the offense. That would tend to suggest possibly the defendant, but in 3B1.1 itself, the defendant cannot be a participant, because there the defendant has to organize other participants, implying that under that guideline, participant does not mean the defendant, and that may also be true for purposes of 2A3.1.
Let me ask you this. What is your understanding of the purpose of the enhancement tied to travel or transportation? What makes it more egregious?
I would like to ask that question, because I do not understand what the purpose could possibly be, and I wonder if it may be unconstitutionally vague because of how broad it could potentially be. In addition to by this court in Sandoval, but if it were applied in this case to the discussion that you just referred to in the chat, we will meet in a public place and then go to your house. If that is all it takes, in a case like this where travel is an element of the offense, every single case, virtually, I cannot imagine how you would have evidence of a case and have evidence of travel without the enhancement applying by a computer.
Maybe it is supposed to apply to everyone because they don't want, I mean, the big source of this is online conversations, not telephones or meeting face-to-face. It's all done.
Why is it worse by a computer than by a text or by a telephone? I don't understand what makes it. I do understand with respect to the enticing a minor.
Well, by a telephone, because then they'd know it was a detective. I mean, at least they'd know. I guess they wouldn't know it was a detective. They'd know it was a man. But some of these people pose as the child herself or himself.
The detectives do.
Right.
In that case,
you couldn't have a phone call.
Well,
because
there are times when the detectives have put the defendant on. Certainly online with the detective posing as a child, but I think the same thing could be done by telephone easily. You can mask your voice to sound like a child. I don't think there's any more anonymity that you can gain by a computer versus a telephone. You can borrow somebody else's computer. You can borrow somebody else's phone. I don't see the purpose of an enhancement for use of a computer to facilitate travel, particularly in an offense where travel is already an element of the offense.
Ms. Dyer, did you make these arguments in your brief?
No, but our brief did not address the travel prong at all, because we were not aware that the travel prong would be claimed by the government as an alternate position. So the first time that came up was in the government's opposition brief. And I don't believe that this court should reject our arguments because we did not put them in the reply brief if we are making them here at the oral argument with respect to the travel prong. There are many reasons why this court should not affirm based solely on the travel prong.
Isn't that the purpose of a reply brief? I'm sorry, I missed your point there. If you first encountered this argument in the government's opposition, isn't that what a reply brief is for?
Well, this court says frequently that we will not entertain claims made in the reply brief in the first instance.
I thought you were saying this is responding to an argument of the government that you were unaware of before.
Perhaps it would have been preferable for us to have put it in the reply brief, for me to have put it in the reply brief. I apologize to the court for not giving advance notice. I do not think that the timing of our arguments when it is a claim that was made for the first time in the opposition brief should lead this court to reject our arguments wholesale, particularly in the facts where the facts of this case, I think, are questionable with respect to what was set up by the telephone. So I also am concerned about the scope of the travel prong of this enhancement, and we would like the chance to litigate that. We did not have that chance below because we were not aware that that was what would be claimed. If there are no further questions, I would like to...
All right, we'll give you a couple minutes. Okay. Mr. Rybicki, good morning.
Good morning, and may it please the court. David Rybicki for the United States. I'd like to start, if I may, with the proposition that Ms. Dyer just made, that the government never before depended on the travel prong. In fact, both parties did, and it was the understanding of both parties and the district court that the computer enhancement applied because Mr. Lasley used his home computer to facilitate travel. And that's evident in both parties' memoranda in aid of sentencing that were submitted to the district court on page 26 of the appendix and page 69 of the appendix. Both parties explicitly state that the computer enhancement applies because Mr. Lasley used his computer to facilitate travel.
So, what is your position of the purpose of the enhancement when it's based on transportation or travel?
Your Honor, we didn't cite any congressional findings or legislative history, but other circuits that have considered this sentencing enhancement and have considered Title 18, Section 2422, which both parties discuss in their briefs, have mentioned that Congress was focused on specifically predatory online behavior and individuals who target children using computers. Congress was cognizant of the fact, and the Eighth Circuit points this out in Spurlock, that oftentimes adults who are acting as an intermediary for the abuse of children or children themselves solicit or are contacted by individuals interested in illicit sexual contact with children. And as Judge Henderson, you mentioned, the most popular contemporary method of doing this is not via telephone, it's via the internet, because as in this case and many other cases, these chat rooms and other social networking websites have greatly facilitated the ability of sexual predators to find children or find adults who are willing to exploit children over the internet.
And can you think of an example where that would not, where travel or transportation would not be involved?
I don't understand your answer.
Well, you're using a computer. That's the prong. You're using a computer, you get a two-point enhancement if you use a computer to facilitate transportation or travel.
Right.
And we seem to agree, at least, that the use of a computer preserves your anonymity. So how would you set it up except by through transportation or travel?
Well, there are certainly offenses that wouldn't involve traveling. They would involve the transmission of images or other offenses of that nature. With respect to traveling, however, if contact was made on the computer and then travel arrangements were made over the telephone, this enhancement 2.31 would arguably not apply. However, I'd also like to address that issue here. The facts of this case are very clear, that the computer, the appellant's home computer, was the instrumentality used to facilitate the travel. In fact, were it not for the computer, he would have never found the chat room, never found the undercover defendant, never been able to make plans with him. And on page 138 of the appendix, the in one of the chats, the undercover agent and the appellant agree as to the time of the meeting and the specific location in the District of Columbia. These were not arrangements that were made via telephone. A telephone call was the last step in the communications between the officer and the appellant. And the telephone call was essentially of the nature of appellant calling the detective saying, I'm leaving my house in Fredericksburg, Virginia right now. I'm going to meet you where we agreed to meet.
What's your response to counsel's argument that you will have the enhancement in every case, right? Because it will always be initiated by some use of the computer.
I think frequently travel plans would be made by a computer, or they would be made using, as they were in the Sandoval case, which this court decided, a Palm Pilot or other internet-capable device. But it's not certainly it's not necessary to the crime, and certainly.
But it would be one thing if you were using such a device to purchase the ticket, let's say, or to make the reservations or whatever. I would see that as separate from the offense. But if the offense is using the computer, trolling, as most of the way most of these cases arise, then you are saying that the enhancement and the crime, you know, in other words, you can't commit the crime without having that enhancement apply.
I don't think so necessarily. There could be hypothetical scenarios in which people say, I'll be someplace, or I live someplace, or we'll make travel plans over the telephone, in which case the computer wouldn't be used to facilitate travel. But here, the facts are very clear. The computer was really the but-for instrumentality. Without the computer, there would have been no relationship and no travel plans made. So it was not only facilitation here, it was the computer was essential. It didn't merely facilitate the travel, it enabled the communication and the travel. And so that's why the parties agreed below, and in fact the appellant stipulated.
Are you giving up on your waiver argument?
Certainly. On page...
Are you giving up your waiver argument?
Oh,
I said, are you giving up on your waiver?
It's our position, as we stated in our brief, that the appellant's ability to challenge the two-point enhancement was waived below, and that's because of the express stipulations that the appellant made in the plea agreement.
Ms. Dyer argues to us that there's precedent that says that needs to be done in open court.
I don't think Accardi is nearly that ironclad. For example, in Guillen, this court said that pre-sentence waivers were presumptively valid. And here, so long as they're knowing and voluntary, and the validity of those pre-sentence waivers endures throughout the sentencing procedure, unless there is some kind of...
Is it your view it doesn't need to be recited in open court?
I don't believe that is a requirement that this court has stated, with specifically that a district judge must itemize the various sentencing enhancements or aspects of the sentence to which an appellant has stipulated. I don't believe that this court has ever stated that with that degree of specificity. And in fact, in a sealed case that this court, a decision that this court handed down on December 12th of last year, it doesn't have a Westlaw citation yet, this court, in considering the issue of waiver, found that a plea agreement was sufficient for the waiver of the sentence, but was not sufficient, it was ambiguous as to waiver of the amount of restitution. And in that case, I don't believe that the district court enumerated specifically or parsed out the various stipulations pertinent to the sentencing aspect that was waived pursuant to the plea agreement. Here the plea agreement is totally unambiguous, Judge Griffith. On page 13 of the appendix, the parties stipulate to the following.
Well, there's no question that the written agreements, you have a strong argument that. I just wanted to know if you were willing to go where Ms. Dyer wants us to go, to say that there needs to be some sort of recitation in open court.
And if I could add, the stipulation, contrary to appellant's representations, specifically states the provision of the sentencing guidelines, the computer enhancement, subsection B6B. Okay. So it's there in black and white, and the parties stipulated to it. And on the final page of the plea agreement, Mr. Lasley stated that he read it, he discussed it with his lawyer, he understood it, he was making the stipulations contained in it voluntarily and intelligently. Further, if I could address the issue of the coercion prong of the enhancement. The district judge never specifically enumerated the reasons for the enhancement. The district judge said, on several occasions, specifically in the transcript of April 7th, at pages 9 and 10, 15 and 16, and 23, that he was depending for his sentence and was justifying his sentence based on the undisputed factual stipulations that the parties had made in the statement of offense and in the pre-sentence report. And below, as I said, the parties agreed that the facilitation prong, not the coercion prong, applied. The district court didn't find whether the facilitation prong and the coercion prong applied. It simply said, given the parties' representations, this is a reasonable sentence, the calculation is reasonable, and the guidelines range is reasonable, and I'm going to sentence at the guidelines minimum. So there was no dependence by the district court on the coercion prong. And as we argue in our brief, there is a factual predicate to support the coercion prong, but the parties weren't proceeding under that theory below. Everyone agreed below, and in fact stipulated, that the computer was used to facilitate travel and not to coerce. If I can make a final point with respect to the PSR, paragraph 16 of the PSR, there's a parenthetical explanation which explains the application of the computer enhancement. Now, that explanation, as the government points out in its brief, is erroneous. In fact, the explanation there describes conduct that would not be punishable under Section 2423. The behavior there was the use of a computer to convince another adult to engage in sexual conduct with a minor. That, I think, is obviously a typographical error or a misunderstanding of the law. The parties weren't depending on that understanding of the application of the enhancement based on their memoranda and the submissions below, and the district court didn't make findings as to the specific reason that the PSR set forth applying the computer enhancement. Thank you.
All right, why don't you take 2 minutes?
Thank you very much. I do have a couple of points I would like to add. First of all, the government says that the parties stipulated to the travel prong below. That is not correct. The parties did cite in their briefs the travel prongs a couple of places, but they were simply misciting the PSR. They were not suggesting this is what we are arguing should apply. They were saying the PSR states, and then they cited the travel prong. So they incorrectly cited the PSR. The PSR itself, as the government points out, also incorrectly stated what was required to apply the enhancement, saying that all was required, that he encouraged a person. The plea agreement itself only stated use of a computer. It didn't state anything else. So Mr. Lasley himself, his lawyer aside, was not informed by the plea agreement what was required as a matter of fact to apply the enhancement. And so he did not have any opportunity to either personally waive or agree to this enhancement because he was...
So it's your position that use of a computer is not enough, that the defendant has to be told that the plea agreement, or what, has...
Well, I think that...
I mean, when there are two different ways you could use a computer and...
The parties can't waive a correct legal ruling. So if, in fact, it is plainly erroneous to apply this enhancement on the facts of this case, then that's a legally incorrect ruling, and the court is required to make correct guidelines findings at sentencing.
But that comes after. What I'm asking is, if the defendant himself is aware that use of a computer makes him subject to an enhancement, are you saying your position is he has to also be told, either for facilitation or coercion?
Yeah, my position is that he has to be told what it is about the use of a computer. This implies that any use of a computer, anytime anybody uses a computer in the commission of the offense for anything, that it will be, that the enhancement applies. And that's what he might have mistakenly viewed as being only all that was required, and therefore he wouldn't have known that more is required, in fact. I think that the questions that the court has about facilitating travel suggest or support an interpretation under which a participant would not be the defendant, because that would eliminate the problem that almost all cases involving computers also involve facilitating travel, because there is an interstate component, and certainly all travel cases do, as this one is. So you know, that's another reason. I don't think the court in this case relied on the chat below, but in any event, I'm a little bit concerned about the citations that the government made to the chat on January 25th, because the PSR and the plea proffer suggest that the later conversations were made by telephone. And so I'm not sure whether some of that, what's included as appears to be chat, might in fact be transcripts of telephone conversations. And that's not clear from the record. It's not clear from what the district court relied on either.
Okay, you need to finish up.
Thank you very much.
All right, thank you.